Today we're beginning with the two dots in the middle of Tet Vav Amud Aleph. Rabbi Yehuda ben Osho, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Omer, he was quoted in the Braita that we brought yesterday. Bala nichnas leichal umaktir ketoret. Her husband can go into the echal and be maktir ketoret. In essence, he's completely tahor. He's not affected by this safek at all. So the Gemara says, v'tipuklei davenogea b'me'et le'et. At minimum, the safek here is that she has a sighting, or she has some sort of ketem, and then retroactively she is tmeah for 24 hours. So okay, he's not a boel nida, but he still came into contact with a nida. And ogev nida is someone who's tameh. At least he has tumat erev, so he shouldn't be able to go into the mikdash. He's not the hor, the gamre. He had some tumah associated with them. So how is it that he is considered here to be completely tahor? So the answer is, damar kishamai. He holds like Shammai. Damar konashim dayan shatan. Tumat hanida is all prospective. There is no zera takanat chachamim siag retroactively in terms of tumah. All tumah is prospective, and therefore there's no tumah that he has to deal with. Tosafot does point out, even according to Shammai, that this idea of prospective tumah is only a din with regards to the third time period we spoke about in our Mishnah. The Mishnah had the immediate, the achar, and then the achar achar. And so what Tosafot points out is that Shammai's position is only with regards to the achar achar, which means any time after the first two periods, then he believes that there's only prospective tumah. But he agrees that if it's in the first time period or the second time period, that there will be tumah misafek, and that even in the second time period, he'll have a classification of a boel nida misafek, and there'll be tameh shiva misafek. So this is his position with regards to the third time period, but he would agree to the Mishnah and what we said in yesterday's daf with regards to the first two time periods after they had biyah. V'tibuklei David Baal Keri. Whoa, wait a minute. If he was together with his wife, which is what's being described over here, they're checking after they had biyah, and then the question is how much time after they had biyah did she do the check and then find the dam. So now he had biyah with her. Biyah includes hatzat shechvat zera, which makes a person tameh. So at minimum, he's a baal keri, which has tumat erev. He has to go to the mikveh, he needs sunset, and then he'd be tahor. He can't work in the mikdash, so why isn't he a baal keri? Mar says, b'shalo gamar biyato. The case where he had biyah, but he didn't finish his biyah. Now, as Rashi points out here, even though he didn't finish his biyah, Rabbi Akiva still considers him to be a boel nida. So how is it that Rabbi Akiva is calling him a boel nida, and Rabbi Yehuda ben Osho, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai thinks that he's tahor the gamre? That Rashi explains, de behara benida ki gamar biyah. As far as classification for arayot, and for Isur Arayot, their Hara, the simple penetration or the touching of the Eiver to the woman, that's already classified as Gemar Biyah, and you are Chayav in terms of Boel Nida, or you're classified as a Boel Nida. As far as Shechvat Zera is concerned, the only thing that makes it that you're Tamei Tumat Shechvat Zera is if you're Motzi the Shechvat Zera. So as soon as he had Biyah with her, you think there's a problem with Boel Nida, he's classified as a Boel Nida. As far as Shechvat Zera is concerned, that is irrelevant until he actually is Motzi the Zera. So that's what the description of the case is now, is that he had Biyah, but he didn't finish the Biyah with her. So he's not Tamei Tumat Shechvat Zera, but he is, if you think there's retroactive Tumah, and you think that that retroactive Tumah includes a problem of Bo'al Nida, which is Shitat Rabbi Kiva, then he is a Bo'al Nida because he qualified for Biyah vis-a-vis Arayot. So the Gemara says, "Umodim chachamim the Rabbi Akiva v'roa ketem." That the chachamim agreed to Rabbi Akiva when you actually just see a stain. We saw this earlier in the Masechta that riat ketem, in terms of its retroactive tumah, is more chamur than a regular sighting where we say there is retroactive tumah. By a normal sighting, retroactive tumah includes only at most 24 hours, and then it could be reduced by mipkida lipkida. That is the way the Chachamim believe. Whereas by a ketem, a Gemara doesn't give any formal threshold by which retroactively you are tamei, but we saw amongst the Rishonim that there were many different opinions, including Rashi, who says that you're tamei ad shat kibuso. All the way back to the last time that this piece of clothing was laundered, you are Tamei retroactively when you find the Ketem. So here we're speaking about a Ketem that is found on the Beged. And now here the Chachamim agree to Rabbi Akiva and say that you're classified as a Boel Nida. According to whom are they saying this? Amar Rav Limafreya. Rav says that means retroactively there is Tuma over here. V'Rabbi Meir he. And it is Rabbi Meir who we said back to, on Daf Hey that Rabbi Meir is Machmir B'Ketamim. That he holds Ketamim to the highest standard. Not that others don't think that Ketem also has a higher standard of Tuma, but he is the one who's most Machmir with regards to Tumat Ketamim. Therefore, he is the author of this position of the Chachamim, by which there is Tuma Limafreya by Ketamim, and Mafreya to the level of Boel Nida. And that's why the Chachamim agree with Rabbi Akiva. Shmuel Amar, Mikan Ulahaba. Shmuel says it's prospective Tuma V'Rabbonani. And even the Rabbanan agree. Once she finds the Ketem, once she has the Ketem, then prospectively, she's classified as a full-fledged Nida, and he would be considered a Boel Nida if he had Biyah with her. Mikana Laba, Pshita. Of course, she finds a stain, then prospectively, she's classified as a Nida. What's the Chiddush to tell me? Oh, we agree with Rabbi Akiva prospectively. Everybody thinks that once you have a sighting of Dam, that she's classified as a Nida, here to forward, so Mao de Temo Hoil Ume Eight Dirabonon Uktamim Dirabonon. Well, first of all, the retroactive Tuma is all a din dirabonon. And the whole idea that you are considered or classified as a Nida when you find a Ketem, when you find a stain on your clothing, is also Midirabanan. So Mal Eight Mate Lomitamat Bola, just like the Chachamim believe by Meit Late, the retroactive Tuma, that you don't have a din of Boel Nida. That is that the Chachamim believe there is Tumat Mishkav, Tumat Moshav, Tumat Magan Nida. All of those things apply retroactively, but they don't think that there is a din of Boel Nida retroactively. That means if the husband was together with her in the last 24 hours, he will be considered as a Nogeya of Nida, of Tumat Erev, but he won't be considered right as a Boel Nida, that he'd be considered 7 days of Tumat. Clearly, it's not chayav a korban because it's all midrabanan. So then, af ptamim lo mitamad bola. So to over here, this institution of the chachamim by ptamim would be similar to their institution by retroactive tuma. By retroactive tuma, there is no boel nida. So to here, by ptamim, maybe there should be no din of boel nida. Kamash malan, but that's not the case. That ptamim have a higher standard. And here you see what the Baalei Tosafot said back on Daf Hey, when the Gemara says that Rabbi Meir is Machmir the Gabeik Tamim, Tosafot says that doesn't mean that he's the only Tana that is Machmir the Gabeik Tamim. Here you see the Chachamim are Machmir by Tamim, Yoter, me, other things. It's just that he is the most Machmir, or he is the one we see most notably in many places, always saying that Tamim are the Chumra. But that's not to the exclusion of other Tanaim that believe that. Like here, where we have an institution midrabanan that is a higher standard by Ketamim. So that's why they are teaching you a chiddush that there is prospective tuma by Ketamim, but prospective tuma that kamash malon includes boel nida in it. It says ve'ma hachanami. Such a good havamina. Why don't we say that's actually what the chachamim hold? Hatam ein shor shachut lefanecha. Over there, you don't have a shechted shor in front of you. Over here, you have the shechted shor in front of you. Or in essence, what they're saying is, the circumstantial evidence is overwhelming prospectively. When you find a ketem, a stain, and you can't attribute the stain to any outside forces, meaning that she wasn't working with meat, she wasn't working with the chicken, she wasn't walking through the shuk, where we could attribute the stain to some outside factor, so then the only possibility is that the blood came from her internally. That's why there's a stain here. Well, if she has a stain and the blood came from her internally, then what else are you to conclude? We have evidence in front of us that she had a sighting. And that evidence, now you're going to tell me or deny that it makes her into a nida? Yes, again, it's only a din derabonan, but you're dealing with evidence in front of you that there's a problem and something happened. On the other hand, by May 8th, you don't have any evidence indicating there was anything wrong prior to this. The discovery of the dam was now. But we then say, l'sayag, retroactively for 24 hours, we're going to say that you were already tamei then. Do you have any evidence of that? No. There's no indication that that's true. We might think it's a good idea to think that way. We might think, well, generally, if we see a sighting now, maybe the dam came out before, but you have nothing to back that up. It's simply speculation. It's a sayag. So with regards to a sayag, we have a lower level of tumah. There's no din of bol nida. Here, where you have a ketem, where there's overwhelming evidence that there's something wrong, then prospectively, not only is she going to be a nida midrabanan, she's going to be classified as a nida to the level of boel nida, that if it's her husband has biyah with her, there'll be tumat shiv'ah because shor shechut lefanecha. You have dam, a stain, there in front of you, indicating that the tumah is here. Chenama Reish Lakish, lima freya. So Reish Lakish takes up the position of Rav, which is that the Mafreya, retroactively, that is true, Rabbi Meir he, and it's according to Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Mikana La'aba, V'Rabbonon he. Then Rabbi Yochanan says that it's prospective, and it's the Rabbonon, and that is why, likely, we paskin here like Shmuel, and not like Rav. Generally, when it comes to Isurei, we would paskin like Rav. Over here, we are paskin like Shmuel, because Rabbi Yochanan is in the position of Shmuel, and we know Rav Rabbi Yochanan, Alacha ke Rabbi Yochanan. That's likely why the halacha here follows Shmuel, even though generally we would believe that halacha kirab isure. I should just note that Rashi over here, it's an important Rashi, together with that which we saw before, Rashi says that we have shor shachut defanecha, because we can't attribute the dam to anything else. And then he says, umiyom shilavashto hi b'safeg zeh. From the time she started to wear this beged, she has this safeg. Rashi, back on Davav, said that it was Adshat Kibuso, all the way back to the last time that she laundered it, that you have the Safek. I don't know if those are mutually exclusive, but it's a little bit of a different nuance that Rashi is giving over here with regards to that. Just to note that that's Rashi's Shita, that it goes back to the time she wore it, or the last time that she laundered it. There are other views within the Rishonim that narrow that time period down, including some that believe that it's only made late, that it has the same retroactive tumah by tamim as it has by other items. Although Rashi's shita is more mainstream in that case, where most believe that the retroactive tumah by tamim is much longer than it is for a regular sighting, where it's only 24 hours. All right, next Mishnah. Kol hanashim b'chezkat tara levaleihen. All women have a chezkat tara as far as their husbands are concerned, meaning they don't require a bdika, because, as Rashi says over here, you only need a bdika for taharot. You don't need a bdika for tashmish hamita. This is Rashi, the shita to. Tosafot also says something similar to Rashi, and has the shita, which is that, as far as the checks are concerned, they're all associated with taharot. They have nothing to do with bia. So over here, where we're exclusively speaking about bia, then there's no need for bdika. If the woman is b'chezkat tara, then there's no need for b'dika, and they can be together without any check whatsoever. Abayim min aderech, people who come back from traveling, nishem lehem b'chezkat tara. Their wives also have a b'chezkat tara. Of course, the first question is going to be, didn't you just make two statements that are identical? What's different about the first versus the second statement? Lama le de mitnei abayim min aderech. Salcha datka mino, I would have thought, it's only true that she has a chezkat tara when he's in town. The ramya nafsha ubadka, because she takes precaution and she checks herself because she's anticipating that they will be together. But when he's out of town, delo ramya nafsha, she doesn't pay such close attention to it because she doesn't think it's going to be relevant. So over there, lo, maybe there is no chezkat tara. Mashmalan, that we do still say that there is a chezkat tara. Over here, the paying attention or paying heed, at least according to Rashi, according to other Rishonim, that you need to do checks anyway for biyah, then you could explain it in that way. But according to Rashi, who says that when you have biyah, there are no checks whatsoever, then the idea here that she's ramya nafsha means that she's just paying attention to the fact that whether she became a nida or she didn't become a nida. She's just more attuned to the nuances of her body, the fact that she possibly became Tmeah, because it has relevance. If it doesn't have relevance, she's okay. If it happens, it happens. If it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. It's not going to make a difference over here. She's not a sukkah b'tarot, and there's no tashmish that she has on the horizon, then whether she is or is not tmeah doesn't really make such a big difference. Doesn't focus on it, and therefore maybe she'll miss it. That would have been your havamina. Kamash Malan, the Mishnah says that we don't say that. We say that even though he's away, as long as she's b'chezkat tara, she remains in that chezkat tara. Okay. Amar Reish Lakish, Mishum Rav Yehuda Nesia. So Reish Lakish says in the name of Rav Yehuda Nesia. Rav Yehuda Nesia is the grandson of Rabbi. Again, he's mentioned in the Mishnah in Avodah Zarah, probably mistakenly. It was probably inserted afterwards because he's an Amora. But he's also the Rebbe of Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish is the Talmud Muvak of Rav Yehuda Nesia. That might be important because we know from the story in Baba Metzia that Rabbi Yochanan helps Reish Lakish to do tshuva, and then he becomes his Rebbe. Over there, the Balei HaTosafot note that Reish Lakish seemingly had a career in Torah before he became a thief and went off the derech, because it sounds from the Gemara that he was bringing him back to his former state. That implies that he had a standing before he went out to Tarbudra. So then this would be explained by the fact that Reish Lakish learned by Rabbi Yehuda Nesia, and that was his original Rebbe. And then he went off the Derech and then returned with Rabbi Yochanan, and then later on learned with Rabbi Yochanan. It's also interesting because Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, we know from the Gemara, also sat in the back of Rabbi's shiur. They heard Rabbi speak. They were young kids at that time. When Rab was in the front row, they were in the back row. But that means that they learned by Rabbi, and then he's also learning by his grandson, Rabbi Yehuda Nesia. That's also interesting. So he says, "Behu sheba umatza b'tochi me'onata." You have to qualify this. It can't be that he's away for 3 years and he left her b'cheskat tara. He comes back, she has a cheskat tara. He has to come back during me'onata, during the normal cycle. Rashi says over here, me'onata are lamid yom l'ri'iya, 30 days after her previous sighting. But after 30 days, then she needs a bdika because stam nashim chazyan sofona. Most women have a regular cycle that is somewhere around 30 days. And so he can assume that if he comes back within 30 days of her last sighting, that she actually is tehora. She has a chezkat tara until she crosses a threshold by which she no longer would have a chezkat tara. That threshold is the time when she would expect to see again. So now, Marabuna, lo shanu elish ein la veset. That's only true if she doesn't have a fixed cycle. Aved yesh la veset asur l'shamesh. If she has a fixed cycle, then he can't have biyah with her. Mar says, kalpe layo. What do you mean? Just the other way around. That makes no sense. Adarab ko ibcha mistavra. Just the opposite makes sense. Ein la veset ema chazai. If she doesn't have a fixed cycle, you could speculate, you could be suspicious that she had a sighting, because you don't know when, and therefore it should be worse off. Yesh la veset, veset kviyala. When she has a fixed cycle, you know what to expect. You can just be, if you're within the period of time that she wouldn't have hit the fixed cycle yet, that she has a cheska tara. It's actually a lot easier to work with someone who has a fixed cycle than someone who does not have a fixed cycle. So why would Rav Huna make a statement that's only true of someone who doesn't have a fixed cycle? If they have a fixed cycle, oh, they can't be together. So, Ela i'itmar hachi itmar. You have to reword this position of Rav Huna. Amar Rav Huna, lo shana ela shelo higia shat vesta. That's only if her veset has yet to come. Aval higia shat vesta asura. But once she reaches the point where her veset should have showed up, then she is asura. Now, as the Balei Tosafot point out, the Gemara did not need to do this. The Gemara could have solved Rav Huna's problem very easily. He says, lo shanu, that's only true, be'in la veset, when she doesn't have a veset. The Gemara could have solved the problem, just said, lo shanu, ela, isha she'in la veset, v'gam isha she'esh la veset. Had he said the din was the same for a woman who doesn't have a veset and does have a veset, then Rav Huna's position would have been totally palatable. But the Gemara doesn't do that, as Tosafot points out. Ella, Yasheva Lashon, Shemar Tchila, Belo Tosefet. They want to reconcile his original statement without adding anything on. They'd like to uphold his original statement. They want to make it that the original statement, which is simply the statement that it only applies to an Isha, She, in la veset, or beer means shaloi gia vesta, then they reworded it in order to make it fit that first language. And so they reconcile it by saying that it's only if the shat vesta has not come about. Meaning that in the time period that he's away, then a woman who has a veset, it has to be a point in time where he didn't hit that veset. But if he hit or crossed over that veset, then he can't be together with her. Kasavar vesto toraita. He clearly believes that veset is de oraita mina Torah, and therefore the ramifications of that are, as Rashi says over here, doraita, halacha lemoshe misinai. It's obviously not written in the Torah anywhere, but vesto doraita is halacha lemoshe misinai, demachzekina ma'a betumat safek. That she gets a cheska tuma when she crosses over her veset. So what it means that vesto doraita is that you need to check at that time period. If you don't check, it is so strong that the halacha lemoshe misinai makes you tamei misafek going forward if you didn't check at the time of your veset. Now whether you can rectify that after the fact or not is questionable because maybe you missed it at the time of the veset and now when you're checking later, you don't see the dam. But the statement here is that veset doraita is so powerful that we expect you to have a sighting, and if you don't check for it, we assume you had that sighting, halacha lemoshe misinai, and therefore you're going to be tamei misafek. Rashi said a similar thing back on Tet Amud Aleph. He said there, vesto doraita, oto b'diga shitzrichu al isha, libadek b'shat vesta, dvar torahi. That fact that you need to do a check at the time of the veset, that's min haTorah. Halacha de Moshe misinai. That's the halacha Moshe misinai. The orach bezmano ba, because we expect the cycle to come at that time. It's interesting how Rashi phrases the halacha lemoshe misinai. Back on Tet Amud Aleph, he says the halacha lemoshe misinai is that we require you to do a check. That requirement for the check is a halacha lemoshe misinai at the time that the veset comes. Whereas over here, he says that the halacha lemoshe misinai is that if you don't check, then we are machzikyu bituma. It'd probably go hand in hand, but it's a nuance, which is it's there the halacha lemoshe misinai is the demand for the check. Over here it is that the halacha lemoshe misinai is if you don't check, the ramifications are that we assume that you are tmeya. Rashi calls it still a tumat safek, even after you have the sighting based on vesto doraita. But if you look in the Baal HaTosafot, he calls it lemanda amar vesto doraita, filu sha'ata kashir zman tvila asurad vadai ra'ata. We assume she definitely saw it. So it seems to be from the Baal HaTosafot that once you cross over that threshold, as if vadai you are tmeya, and we treat you like a nida tmeya vadait. Because according to Rashi, there still is a safek, even though we would assume the chazaka is that you saw. Nevertheless, it's not a vadai, it's still a safek tuma. Obviously, this has nafkamino halakhically, including the possibility of needing to bring a korban for boiled nida. But that is what it means to have vesto de oraita, is that we make the assumption that you are tmeya at that point in time. So he loses the cheskat tara, now it flips to a cheskat tuma, and that's why he's asur to be with her. Rabba barachara marafilu geyan shat vesta, nami muteret. Even if it crosses over her shat veset, she's muteret. Kasavar, he believes, vesto de rabbanon, that the veset is only mid rabbanon. The fact that you're going to have a sighting at a particular time, that's only a rabbinic institution that you need to check at that time. That means if you miss the check, we don't necessarily makzik you as tmeya, because it's possible that you didn't have a sighting. This is all rabbinic. It's not midoraita. That is what Baal HaTosafot explained back on Daf Tet as to what's the difference between veset doraita and veset derabanan. Is this, if you miss the check on the time of the veset, what's the status of the woman? If you think it's veset doraita, that makes you gain a cheskat tuma. If it's veset midorabanan, then you don't get a cheskat tuma. You have check and you find yourself tahor, then we believe that you are still tahor because you never gave any signs or indications that you were tmeya. Now, Tosafot obviously asks over here, wait a minute, tema hecha muteret. How could it be that she crosses over the point in time where you would expect her to have her veset? Yes, vesto darmid rabbanan. How could you even think that he should be able to be together with her? You got to assume at some point that she's going to have her cycle. And we have a principle that's brought in the Gemara in Shavuot, and we're going to see it later on in our Masechta, which is Azara the Bnei Soshi, for Shumini Shnoteim, Samuch Levestan. That you have to separate from your wife close to the time period where you expect her to have a Veset, because we fear that she's actually going to have a sighting. And therefore you have to separate, you have to have a Hachaka to separate away before that, so that you're not in the world of Safek and Nida. Which means that we expect her to become Tmeah. We expect her to become Tmeah. How can you claim, if he crossed over the Veset, even if it's Veset Midrabanan, that he's allowed to be with her, and she retains her Cheskat Tara? The Tosafot says something that's Michudesh Et, which is, Yesh Lamar, Kishishata Achar Vesta Shiva Yamim. It's a case where it's 7 days after you would have expected the Veset, Sheyachola Lidbo, because then she could have already gone to the Mikveh. She crossed over the point of time where she could have had a sighting, and now you gave her sufficient days, 7 days, midoraita, is all that tumat nida is, and then you go to the mikveh, and you gave her those 7 days. So now you have safek tefillah, motziya midei, safek riya. So the safek that she went to the mikvah will remove the safek riya. And why the Tosfot to me is so mechudeshet is that, is it really a safek riya? At some point, you've got to believe that the woman's cycle is going to come about. And to say that it's a safek riyah, yeah. At that exact moment, if you think beset derabonon, then that, yeah, there's a safek riyah. But if you're 7 days after that, it's clear that in all likelihood or high, high probability is that she had a sighting. To say then after that, that a safek tvila is motzi midei safek tuma, it's more like a safek tvila is motzi midei vadai tuma. And that you can't do, which we're going to see on the second half of today's daf, ain't safek motzi midei vadai. So it's a very interesting approach that the Balei Tosfot say. And then he says, ulamanda amar vesto doraita, according to what it said, vesto doraita, if you wait 7 days afterwards, you still can't be together, because then it's vadai that you had a riyah, and a safek of tefillah. Safek tefillah can't be motzi midei vadai riyah. But it's amazing that he considers the Veset doraita a vadai riya, not a vadai riya at that moment, but just a vadai riya. Whereas the veset derabonan, he's suggesting now, is not only it's not a vadai riya at that moment, it's not a vadai riya at all. I mean that you could actually skip the cycle according to this, it's veset derabonan, which to me seems like a far-fetched suggestion as to why it works over here. Now obviously Tosafot's trying to deal with the Gemara, which says that she crossed over a veset, and she still has a cheskat tara, which is, wow, how could you say that? So he solves the problem by saying it's enough time that she could also got into a tvila. So what you have to say for the Balei Tosafot is, if you consider it to be a veset midrabanan, there's an obligation midrabanan to check, but there is no cheskat tuma that's associated with the woman if you don't check, and we don't assume automatically that there is a sighting that gives her a cheskat tuma, which is not true by vesto doraita, whereby the obligation to check is then connected to a cheskat tuma because of the assumption that it's going to come. And given that, we consider or classify you to now have cheskat tuma. The question you're asking is a fair question in this entire sugya, which is, she has the information. Why not just ask her the information and then you can clarify? That is a general question that's brought up by the Gemara with regards to chazakot. If you have the ability to clarify a chazaka, can you still rely on a chazaka? And there the Gemara makes differentiation, and then the Rishonim take all of that and then clarify, like the Bach, for instance, believes that when you have a chazaka bidei shamayim, you can rely on it without checking. If you have a chazaka bidei adam, then you need to double check it if you can and not rely on it. So he comes out la'alocha, for instance, by tzitzit. The reason you need to check your tzitzit every morning is, yes, they have a chazaka of kashrut, but they're bidei adam. They're things that are not bidei shamayim. They're things that you could cause the problem in terms of tearing them. You tied them. You knotted them. You put them in place. That's all bidei adam. So since you can check it, and it's a chazaka bidei adam, you have to check it. You can't rely on the chazaka, and therefore you need to check it before you make a brach on it. That's the view of the Bach. So over here, too, why don't we just say you have the possibility of a chazaka or the possibility of getting the information from her? Why rely on a chazaka when you can just ask her for the information? It's efshar levarer. You can clarify the situation. So you have to explain in all these situations that she is either sleeping or quasi-sleeping, like we saw in the sugyot before, whether you have to awaken her to ask her whether she is tahora. So this is a corollary to that, which is he comes home from a trip and he finds her sleeping, and he climbs into bed with her, does he have to wake her up and start saying Torah, Torah, or can he assume that she is Tohora? Again, then you have to deal with the Tosafot over there, that she's not completely sleeping, because that's inappropriate, so she is somewhat sleeping, but you can understand why, if he had to wake her up completely, and then work through the Torah, that might be a damper, as we saw in the Balei Tosafot, that's something, it would ruin the mood, or ruin the situation, and so that's why you have to explain over here that he can't get the information from her. Can't say that she's missing because she's a party to this thing. You have to say that he can't get the information because she's in a state where it's not easy to get the information. The Ramban, in answering on behalf of Rashi, as to why Rashi says immediately after the Vesed, the husband can be together with his wife, and not like what the Balei Tosafot say, that it's 7 days later when she could have gone to the mikveh, he suggests that her acquiescence to engage in intercourse can be assumed to be an implicit green light that she is Torah. So all the Gemara is saying here, according to this view of the Ramban and Rashi, is that normally you would have to check and ask her Torah. At, are you really Torah? And she would have to answer. Over here, you can rely on the Chezkat Tara, as well as the fact that she's not objecting to engaging in Biyah, to assume that she is Torah. And in that way, you also then solve the problem as to why not ask the woman over here. Well, the answer is because we are getting that information implicitly, and therefore we don't demand you ask, because her lack of objection is an acquiescence that basically says, Torah ani. Although this solution of the Ramban only works if the woman is engaged willingly and is acquiescing. If she's sleeping, then none of this holds true, because then she doesn't really have acquiescence in an active sense that could imply that she really is Torah. Ravashi matnei hochi. Ravashi has the machloket in the following manner. Amar Rav Huna, lo shanu el shein la veset yamim, el yesh la veset yamim lukfitzot. It's only true that he can rely on the Chezkat Tara if her veset is determined not only by time, but also by activity. Only when she jumps at a certain time interval does she have her menstrual cycle. Kevan dimemaset talya milta, since it requires her not only to reach that threshold, but also to do an activity, Ema lo kofitz velo kazai. You can assume she didn't jump, and then she didn't have a sliding. So you can rely on that in order to keep her bechezkat tara, even if you cross over the veset. A number of Rishonim have a girsa over here of Ela yesh la veset lekfitzot, and doesn't have the word yamim in there. And from here, they prove that you can't have a veset for a physical activity. And a veset doesn't always have to be connected to an interval or a time period. It can be connected solely to an activity, which is a machloket that the Rishonim had earlier on when we dealt with the sugya of kvitzot, as to whether you can actually have a veset that is simply connected to a physical activity. If you have that girsa here, then that clearly would indicate that such a veset is possible. Aval yeshla veset yamim asura l'shamesh. On the other hand, if it is simply driven by time interval or days, then you cannot be together, because we assume that if you cross over that threshold, then she is tmeya, kasavar vesto doraita. Once again, that means that he believes vesto doraita, and if you cross over that threshold, we deem you to be badai tmeya. Rabba bar chadamar, afilo yeshla vesed yamim. Even if she only has a cycle that is driven by days, not by an activity, muteret. Even after you cross over that point, she is muteret, kasavar vesto derabonon. He holds that vesed is derabonon, and again, it goes back to what we said in the previous amud, and you have to then invoke the Balei Tosafot about the issue of the mikveh. Amar Rav Shmuel, Mishmei de Rabbi Yochanan. Isha sheyesh la veset, bala mechashev yimei vesta, ubaleha. A woman who has a fixed cycle, then her husband can track the cycle, do the calculation, and then know that she is Tehora, or assume that she is Tehora. Once again here, this is what I'm saying to you, the whole sugya looks like this. Just ask her. So here it's saying you're not asking her, must be that she's in a state where you can't ask her, and therefore you have to make assumptions. You can make these assumptions knowing that she has this cycle. You can make the assumptions that if this is her cycle and you know the last time the cycle began, that she's within the period of time where she would not have a sighting, and therefore she has a chezkat tara. Amar lei Rav Shmuel bar Yeva, the Rabbi Abba. Now Rav Shmuel bar Yeva asked Rabbi Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Did Rabbi Yochanan say this? Either it's afilo yalda, which would be the noun, or afilo yalada, and would be a verb. Rashi claims that it's a young girl that is the beziza of the mitzvah, is embarrassed to go to the mikveh. So you have an assumption here that you know her cycle, and you also know that if you get to a certain point in her cycle, she'll have to go to the mikveh in order to become tohara. So she has a fixed 30-day interval cycle. So now, she had a sighting on 30 days. 7 days later, she goes to the mikveh, she's tohara, and he has her b'chezkat tohara. Then it has, again, passes through 30 days, so he knows that she had a sighting at that point. Then, after that sighting, 7 days later, you can assume she went to the mikveh in order to become tohara. So the question is, can you rely on that? Does Rabbi Yochanan believe that you can rely on the fact that she will not only become tamei, but she also will go to the mikveh and become tohor? Is that a reliable way to work with this? We just said now, if he calculates the veset, then he can rely on calculating the veset. That's what Rabbi Yochanan said. Does that hold true not only for the veset, but does that hold true for the next cycle where she'll become tamei and then go to the mikveh? So the question here is, okay, for a normal situation, a normal woman, you can assume she had her sighting at the fixed time. She also went to the mikveh. But here you're dealing with a young girl who is embarrassed to go to the mikveh, and she's more reluctant. Despite that reluctancy, are we going to say that we assume she went to the mikveh and she is Torah? Or do we say maybe there's some hesitation here to rely on that chazokah? That's one way to read it. The Balei Tosafot don't like the way Rashi reads it for a number of reasons, and therefore they translate Yalda as being she gave birth. The beziza, the mitbah, she's scared to go to the mikveh. You know that a woman postpartum is in a state of choli, and she has a wound, she has open bleeding, and if she has to go to the mikveh, it's a little scary. And Tosafot quotes a story from the Gemara that the Rabbah's wife went within 30 days of giving birth, and she fell ill. You can understand that in their day, the mikveh was not exactly the cleanest place. There wasn't chlorine in the mikveh. And now you're taking a woman who has open wounds and bleeding going on and trauma to her body, and then she's going to an area where there's a lot of bacteria, a non-hygienic area. You can understand there's huge risks involved in that. And that would be the fear. Ziza doesn't mean embarrassed, but ziza means fearful. So she's fearful of going to the mikveh. So the question is a similar idea, which is, you know for certain that she's going to become tmeya, either because she gave birth, so she's definitely tmeya, or because she had a cycle and she crossed over that cycle. So we know she's tmeya. Can you rely on the tvila on the other side to take you out of that cheskat tum'ah and assume she's now tehora? And he's now putting in factors that would make it less likely that she goes to the mikveh. She's a young girl who's embarrassed, a woman who gave birth and is fearful. That takes away from that consideration that she might have gone to the mikveh. He says, Amalei, atu vadai ra'ata mi'amai Rabbi Yochanan. Wait a minute, you just made a huge leap of faith by extrapolating Rabbi Yochanan to somewhere he didn't say. Rabbi Yochanan said that you can calculate her cycle if you're within the period of time before she would have a sighting, then she has a cheskat tahara. Where did Rabbi Yochanan ever say that if you know her cycle, that you can cross over the period of time you'd expect the cycle and then believe that she's tohara again? All he said is once she is tohara, you can calculate the next time she will become tmeah and assume she has a cheskat tahara until that point in time. He never said if you cross over the cheskat tumah that you can then gain a cheskat tahara again by going to the mikveh. He never said that. You extrapolated that. Ima damar Rabbi Yochanan safek rata, safek lo rata. Rabbi Yochanan said that where he has a safek as to whether she did or did not see. So you can rely on your calculation to maintain her cheskat tahara because you don't know if she saw. Even if she did see, she went to the mikvah. So you have a, but it's in essence, a sfeik over here. You have a sfeik whether she saw or not. And the evidence is towards the side that she didn't see because of the fact that it is during the period of time where you don't expect her to see. And even if she did see, you can assume that she went to the mikvah to take care of that. So then you'd have to at least an interval of 7 days in order for that to be true. But that is because you're dealing with sfeikot. About vadai rata, if she definitely saw, which means she crossed over her veset, then mi yemar de tavla. Who says that she could went to the mikveh? How do they sfeik vivadai? You have a sfeik that she went to the mikveh, vadai that she saw, vein sfeik motzi mi de vadai. The sfeik cannot take out of a vadai. And so according to Rashi, by a young girl, the din would be the same, which is that safek rata, we don't know if she saw it, and safek tvila, and a safek can't be motzi midei safek, but in a case where it's vadai rata, then ain't safek motzi midei vadai. Whereas according to the Balei HaTosafot, where it's a birth, there she was vadai rata, and therefore the safek tvila would not be motzi midei the ri'ya vadait. That's Tosfot's main question on Rashi's Pshat. Where do you see a Ria Vadait by Yalda? So the Tosfot Arosh just says it's not referring to a Yalda, it's referring to a woman in general. That a woman in general had a Vadai Ria, who says that Rabbi Yochanan would say a Safek Tvilah is Motzi. So if it is a Safek Ria, like the case of the young girl, then in Okanami the Safek would be Motzi. But if it's a Vadai Ria, a Safek cannot solve that problem. Now the Gemara says below, is that really true that a Safek can't be motzi midei vadai? Vatanya is a classic gemara that's brought in a number of places with regards to safek and vadai, the main gemara in Pesachim, about the ability or the capacity for a safek to remove something that is a vadai. Chaver shemet. A chaver is someone who's makpid al shemot masrot tuman tara. He passed away, meniach migura mleya peirot. And he left a storehouse full of peirot. Afilu ein b'nei yoman. Even if they were fresh, they were put in there that day. We assume that the Trumot and Masrot were taken off of them. You know for sure that they're Tevel because they crossed over the Gemar Malocha. They had Miruach. They had all the things that indicate that they have a Gemar Malocha, which means they're certainly Tevel, they're Chayav and Trumot and Masrot. Safek Musar, Safek Eni Musar. And we're not sure whether Trumot and Masrot were taken off. Vikati Safek Mutsi Midei Vadai. And the Braita says that we believe that they have Trumot and Masrot taken off of them, even though it was Vadai Tevel, and it's only a Safek whether he really did or did not take off Trumot and Masrot. We give him the benefit of the doubt, and we say, if Safek is Motzi Midei Vadai, Hotam Vadai Vivadai Hu. Over there, it's not a Safek and a Vadai, rather it's a Vadai and a Vadai. That is, Kidrav Chanina Choza. Damrav Chanina Choza, Chazak al Chaver, Shein Motzi Mitachat Yado, Devar Shein Mutukan. A chaver has a chazaka that he doesn't allow anything to leave his possession or be in his possession where someone could possibly take from it while it is tevel. He is mitaken it immediately in order that there won't be any problems. So that's a chazaka that makes it that a vadai that he took off Shumot and Masrot. So just know, Tosafot comes on it from the side of the safek, but you have to know that the sfekot over here are strong sfekot, as Tosafot calls them. They're not like a regular safek where it's like kind of yeah, kind of no. It's not things where you have like a 50-50 probability. These safekot over here are safekot that have much higher probability. Would say that it's 75% yes or something like that. The Gemara moves it up to like 95% by saying it's a chazaka that he definitely took it off, and that can be motzi midei vadai. But even before that, when we thought it was a safek, it's not a weak safek to say that most likely he took off Trumot Masrot. It's a strong safek, and that's why the Gemara here has a havamina that the safek could be motzi midei vadai. It's not your typical safek. It's a safek that has a high probability that it was carried out. And then Gemara is saying, look, with a high probability like that, you can have a safek motzi midei vadai, which is similar to our case over here, which is by the mikveh and the tumah. Tumah is vadait. Her going to the mikveh is a safek, you're right. But it's not a safek 50-50. It's a safek that has a high probability that she did go to the mikveh. It's just not a vadai. So the Gemara answers and says that case by the peirot is a vadai and vadai, and that's why it's not any proof that you can be a safek motzi midei vadai. V'ibaydeim ha-safek v'safeku. The other way to deal with it is not to say that the rectification is vadai, but to say that a problem is only a safek. And that is because uked rabo shaya. Dam rabo shaya, marim adam al tvuato. A person can be a little bit sly with regards to his produce. Umachnitza b'motshela, and he brings it in while it's still in its shell. Kedeshei b'mto chelet, because his animal then could eat it. Ubturam in a maser, and he won't be chayav in maser. Now, as Rashi explains over here, that there are requirements with regards to produce in order to be tevel or chayav in Shumot Masrot. One of them is gemar malacha. You need to finish the processing of the item. And that is done by what's called Meruach HaKri, when you flatten out the pile after you've done the processing. That's the Gemar Malacha. That is not the end of the line in terms of making you Chayav and Trumot to Masrot. Elaim Kain, you have plans to sell it or do something with it that is not bring it into your house. But if you intend to use it personally and bring it into your house, there is another requirement which is called Riyat Pnei Abayit. It needs to see the face of the house, or basically it needs to go through the front door. In order for you to be Chayav in Trumot de Masrot, not only do you have to have Gemar Melocha, you need Riyat Pnei Abayit. But you need Riyat Pnei Abayit when it's already finished. When the processing is already done, it needs Riyat Pnei Abayit. So over here, you're avoiding the Chiyuv Tevel by circumventing the Halacha. You circumvent the Halacha by bringing in the items in their shell. That means that there's no Gemar Melocha. You haven't finished processing the item. So now it has Riyat Pnei Abayit. It comes into the house, enters the house when it's in its shell, which means that it's going to have a Gemar Melocha. And therefore, even if you process it in the house and finish off the Gemar Melocha in the house, that's a failure in Riyat Pnei Abayit, and you never will be Chayav in Trumot Umasrot. At least, Midoraita. Midorabanan, there is a Chiyuv of Trumot Umasrot, but Midoraita, there is no din of Trumot and Masrot. So, as Rashi points out, Kevan the Bishad Riyat Pnei Abayit, Lo Nigmaram Lafto, since at the time that it came into the house, it was not finished being processed, the maser too low michaiva, it never will become chayav in Trumot and Masrot. Then additionally, in the next Rashi, Kadeshe Bemto Chelet, Afilu Lachar Miruach, even after you process it in the house, Deilu Amachaladam lo matzi the Meimar Hachi. For human consumption, you can't say that. Dei nami lo michaiv midoraita, Rabbonon Gazura Achilat Keva. Even when you're not chayav in Trumot and Masrot, midoraita, there is an institution of the Chachamim that you cannot have a fixed eating or a fixed meal that comes from items that will be tevel or that will at some point be chayav in Trumot and Masrot. Afilu b'davar shelo nigmar hamelachto. Even by something that's not finished processing. When you're out in the fields and you're processing the grains, you're allowed to eat meat achilat arai. You're allowed to eat from it a snack until it hits the point of gemar melocha. Achilat keva, even though technically you should be able to have an achilat keva then, because it's not chayav in Shemot Masrot, the Rabbanan were goes there in those cases, no achilat keva, when it has a chance to become tevel, or that you're going to be chayav in Shemot Masrot, even mid the Rabbanan. So over here too, when you bring it into the house in this manner, yes, you can give it to animals, because all machal be'ima is considered to be arai. It doesn't have achilat keva animals. Animals are always considered achilat arai. So then, since you can get benefit mi'arai, so when you bring it into the house in this manner, you can continue feeding it to the animals even after gemar melocha. As far as humans' consumption is concerned, you can't eat it not before you brought it into the house, not after you brought it into the house. At least for achilat keva, for achilat arai, you continue to do that by beforehand and afterwards. But that's why the gemara says then you can feed it to your animals because of that. Tosfot also points out over here, if you brought in the items through the front door, and there was Riyat Pnei Abayit, and there was Gemar Malocha, then it'd be Tevel Mido Raita, and then you would not be able to feed it to your animals. It's only because he does it in this backhanded manner that he's able to feed it to his animals. And Tosfot says, where do you ever find that there's an Isur Hana by Tevel? We know there's an Isur Achila by Tevel, but where do you ever find an Isur Hana? So a person can't eat the Tevel, but feeding it to his animals, which is an Isur Hana, where do you ever see there's such a concept of an Isur Hana by Tevel Midoraita? So over here, the Baalei Tosfot, which they do in a number of places in Shas, point out that based on the Gemara in Bamei Madlikin that says, et mishmeret trumotai, v'shtei trumot akatum midaber, truma tmeya and truma tehora have the same din. And then the Gemara says there, just like by truma tehora, which whose purpose is to be eaten, and if you take off the trumot, you'll be allowed to eat it, so just like by Truma Torah, it's only mutar to you to eat after the Harama, so too by Truma Tmeya, or Tevel Tmeya, it's only mutar for you to utilize. And Truma Tmeya is only an issue of Hana'a. It only becomes mutar for you to utilize it after it's, the Truma has been separated away from it. So you see from there that even by issues of Hana'a, there's still a requirement of Haramat Truma. And that means that Tevel, that does not have Haramat Truma from it, has an Isur Hana'ah associated with it. And that's what Tosafot concludes, that there is actually an Isur Hana'ah, not just an Isur Achila, with regards to Tevel Midoraita. So now, what Rashi says in the end is, Ula Gabe Isura Derabonan. So now we're dealing with an Isur Derabonan, Mahanya Cheskat Chaver. Then the Chazak of the Chaver is enough to unwind that. So again, Midoraita, you don't have Tevel here. So, Midoraita, everything is mutar. Midrabanan, you have Isurim, at least with regards to Achilat Keva. With achilat arai, it's mutar. Now, achilat arai means achilat arai for an adam, or any eating of a behemah is considered achilat arai. So as far as those are concerned, you are mutar. But now we're talking about in this braita, where you're allowed to eat it as an adam, achilat keva. Why is that? Because I have a chazakah that the chaver took off the item, and I also have a isur that's only an isur derabanan, because midoraita, it's totally mutar to eat. So I have an isur derabanan, and then I have a chazakah, which is still a safek. Rashi calls it a chazakah, but the Gemara is really still calling it a safek. I have a safek whether he did take off Trumat HaMasrot. I have an isur derabanan. A safek is strong enough to remove an isur derabanan. That's an interesting assumption that safek ein motzi midei vadai when you're dealing with doraita. But when you're dealing with the rabbanan, a safek is motzi midei vadai. That's because a safek rabbanan is lekula. So that's basically what you're generating. You're generating a safek midarabanan in the end. You have something that's badai problematic midarabanan, but you have a safek whether it's rectified. That makes it into a safek midarabanan in some senses. Not exactly that, because you already had a cheskat badai, so you're trying to undermine it. But nevertheless, that's the concept. Tosafot challenges that and says it's really true that you can have a safek motzi midei badai derabanan. And then he quotes from the Gemara in Pesachim, where it seems to be that we're dealing with an issue of bedika. And Vidika is midrabanan, and the Gemara over there says it's ain't safek motzi midei vadai. That means that it doesn't work by derabanan. So Tosafot goes out of his way to explain that the case in Pesachim is the case where you didn't do bitul. You didn't do bitul, which would have relieved you of any chametz problems midoraita. And we don't do bitul, Vidika becomes doraita. And then it becomes ain't safek motzi midei vadai doraita. And that's how Tosafot solved the problem. So Rashi's formulation that the Gabe Yisur Durana Mehanya Cheskat Chaver makes it that the chazakah is strong enough to overcome the problem of vadai derabonon. The Tosafot formulates it slightly differently and says that a safek is strong enough to be motzi midei vadai in a derabanan. So it could be that Rashi is saying the same thing, although the Ramban claims that Rashi's point is that this isn't a case of safek motzi midei vadai derabanan because you're relying on a chazakah. And a chazakah is like a vadai connected a derabanan. And that's enough to be motzi midei vadai derabanan, but that's not safek motzi midei vadai. On the other hand, Tosafot believes that there still is a safek here, and it's a safek motzi midei vadai derabanan, and that is Tosafot's conclusion, that you can't have safek motzi midei vadai in dinei derabanan. Although Tosafot's shita is a little difficult because on the Amud Aleph, they told us that Rabbi Yochanan holds that vesto derabanan. That means the whole Gemara's question here is, can a suffix be motzi midei vadai in an issue of vestot midrabanan? And according to Tosafot, it's a given, according to the Gemara, that that definitely works. So then what's the whole nature of the Gemara's question over here? That what might have led the Tosafot to give an additional answer, which is, v'od omer ri, t'ha de kamar ocha da v'b'cheskat mitukanim, haino v'hanak t'lo chazu el v'ema. The Ri gives a different explanation here, which avoids this problem and says, that when we say over here that they have a din of cheskat mitukanim, that's to feed them to animals. That's not for human beings to eat them. Because by animals, they were mutar anyway beforehand, and therefore you can assume that they are mitukanim. Because even if you did it in a backhanded manner, they would have been mutar to eat. So here we don't know if you did it in a backhanded manner. You can assume that they're ra'oi to eat, because there you have a safek that's really a safek. It's not vadai tevo, and they would have been mutar anyway. So the safek is not motzi midei vadai. That's how you solve the problem. I say it's all about animal feed and not about human consumption. That's another way to deal with this safek, motzi midei safek. Though the Tosafot Rosh simply solved the problem by saying that when it says here it's mutar le beima, it's not just the beima, it's also the adam. The reason it mentions beima is because it's bemot shela, it's still in its shell, which is usually what you feed the animals. But ain't achanami. It would even be mutar le'adam, and if you do that, then you don't have any vadai isur, not midoraita, not midorabanan, and that's why the safek is motzi midei safek over here, because there is no vadai. Interesting, every time I read this Gemara, I just think is interesting is that we're dealing here with a chaver, shemet, the person who is makbid on halacha, and the Gemara makes a suggestion here that you can rely on the fact that he might have been sly and taking the stuff in backhanded way, so that he doesn't have to take off Trumot HaMasrot. Seems to be at odds with what this person is, that we're assuming he's a chaver and he takes off Trumat HaMasrot. Yet we're saying, oh, we can rely on the fact that he might have done this backhanded manner in order to get out of Trumat HaMasrot. So it's an interesting issue. It's almost like an oxymoron where you have a chaver that's cheating to get out of tumot and masrot. Nevertheless, the Gemara does bring that as at least enough of a reliance that makes it that it's a safek, and if it's a safek, you can have a safek motzimi de safek. Gemara says, v'kati en safek motzimi de vadai. Is it really true that a safek can't remove a problem of vadai? V'atanyo, don't we have a braita? Mase b'shifchato shomesik echad berimon. There was an incident of a shifcha, a maidservant, of an individual who was a mesik berimon. Now, over here, Tosfot says mesik comes from the word mosek. He's an olive picker. So there's a guy who picked olives, or he had olive groves. That was his profession. And he lived in a place called Rimon. Shitila nefel abor. This shifcha had a miscarriage into a pit somewhere, into a cistern somewhere. Bakoin veitzitzbo. Kohen came and looked at it to see whether the discharge was a discharge that would make her, first of all, tmeah, and also a discharge that would be mechayev her in a korban. Leda im zacharim nekeva, to know if it was a male or a female, because it makes a difference in terms of your days of tumah and tahara. Uba maaseh lifnei chachamim. The incident came to the chachamim, v'tiyaru, and they said that the kohen is tahor. Mipnei shechuda ubardulas mitzuim sham, because there are weasels and polecat and something in that family, mean that those that are living underground and eat these types of items. So since they're common there, so that is a consideration that they might have taken it away already. So Ba'ahacha, the Vada Itila Nefel, she definitely had a miscarriage that was a Nefel. Safek Garua, Safek Lo Garua. And we're not sure whether they pulled it away or not. And you tell me the Kohen, that was Mahayil, he was made an Oel over it, that he is Tahor. How can you say that? It's Vadai that there was a Nefel miscarriage that is Tamei, and now you have him Safek whether it was there or not when he leaned over, and you're making him Tahor. Mikate Safek Umotzi Mide Vadai. And here you have a Safek that's taken away from a Vadai. But here, first of all, we have to deal with the Kohen. Rashi brings it first, Kohen Chacham Haya Umare Horaot. So say, Tamid Chacham Kohen, that's why they called him in order to give a Psak Halacha, to tell us whether the Nefel was a Zachar or Nekeva, and what the din is with regards to the Tumah over here. The problem with that is, as Rashi points out in the Balei Tosfot second, that is, he can't be that smart a Kohen, he can't be that big a Talmid Chacham. What is he doing leaning over this thing and making himself Tamei? A Kohen doesn't have a right to make himself Tamei, Tumah Tamei, in order to Paskin Halacha. So why would he even take the chance of leaning over to find out this information? Rashi brings an alternative that he was looking to see whether she had to bring a korban to see if he would be during his shift in the Mikdash. And then he'd be the beneficiary of that. So Rashi says, I don't think that's right because a woman doesn't have an obligation to bring the korban at a particular time. She can bring it whenever she wants in order to become Torah. Number two is, it's two birds. He's concerning himself with two birds that you're going to bring up to the Mikdash. That's going to be during his Zman when he's in the Mikdash. Doesn't make sense. And then he says, Lashon Rishon, that he's a Talmid Chacham looking at Tumah, Eino Nira. Di Chacham hu Klumaya Balahil. He's a Chacham. What is he doing hanging over something that could make him into Tameit Tumah Tameit? Ela Kohen Ama Aretz Haya. He was clearly an uneducated Kohen. O Katan, B'Shigrato Isha Le'etzitz V'Lirot. Or he's a Katan, a Kohen Katan, and his mother sent him to go see, because maybe he's not Mitzuveh on Tumah Tameit. Therefore, it was that situation. And Tosfot also says it was a Kohen Amaretz. We deal with a Kohen Amaretz who might have the ability to discern about an Nefel, but certainly doesn't know the laws of Tumah Tahara because he's leaning over. That's the first thing. The second thing is that the Shifcha here had a miscarriage or a birth. She is a Shifcha Kananit. You see from here that there is Tumat Leida and a Din of Leida by Shifcha Kananit. That's what Tosfot says. It's obvious. Mashma the Shifcha Metama B'Leida. Shivchananid as Tumat Leida. Otherwise, why any of this relevant if it doesn't matter what a Shivchananid has? The fact that we're dealing with the Tumah and to know whether she is Tmeyah, that tells you that a Shivchananid is subject to all of these dinim. And that's important because that shows you that her Chiyuva Mitzvot of Shivchananid includes the world of Tumah Tara and Leida, which is interesting. So then the Gemara says, here you have a Vadai, that there's a Nefel down there. That's what it said. He went to check if it was a male or a female. Which means that they know it was a miscarriage. That was a Nefel that is Tamei. They just need to know whether it was male or female to know what Tumah we're dealing with. So that is vadai, that there's a tamei item there. And you have a safek that it was taken away by some animals, like a weasel. And you're telling me the kohen is tahor. Gemara says, how could it be that a safek is motzi midei vadai? Gemara says, lo tema itila neifa labor. You have to reread the bright a little bit. It's not that she had a miscarriage. That was definitely a nafel. A nafel means an entity that is already classified to be far enough along that it will make you tamei. Ela ema kimin nafel. It was like a nafel. It says over there, they sent him to check whether it was a zachar and a keva, which means it already presumes that it was a nafel, and he's just checking male or female. Hakin kamar. No, 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 this is what it means. The first thing he's trying to determine, is it a nafel? Did it meet the threshold to become tamei at all? Or was it just something that was a non-viable entity, but something that wasn't even at the threshold that it's considered a birth? And if it was an entity that you would be tamei for, they died zachar ibn keva. So that now already makes it into a safek, which means that you have a safek mutsimidei safek. You have safek tuma, because we don't know if it's a nafel or not. And now you have the bartulis and the chulda that could safek, they took it away. So safek is mutsimidei safek. Now again here, we're going to see from the next line of the Gemara, the safek here is a strong safek. It's not a 50-50 shot that the bartulis and the chulda took it away. It's a high probability that they took it away. Then you can see in the next line of the Gemara, v'ibay tema, came into chulda bartulis mtsuim sham, since they're found there, vadai geruha. They definitely took it away. Yes, it was a case where it was a vadai nefel. But we look at a bartulis and a chulda as being a vadai. It is such a high probability that if there's quote-unquote flesh there that's in their world, they're going to take it away quickly and they're going to be eating it very quickly. If that's the case, it's vadai motzim de vadai, and ain't safek motzim vadai. I'm saying that just colors what you said before. If you think it was a safek, and it was a safek motzim de safek, it's a high level safek, a high probability safek that they're gonna take it away. But once again here, it's either safek motzim de safek, or vadai motzim de vadai. We don't have a safek motzim de vadai. And that's what the Gemara started with, which is, who says that Rabbi Yochanan would agree that when you cross over the threshold of Veset, that you would then, for a Safik Tvila, say that she is Tehora. You have Vadai that she had a sighting, Safik she went to the Mikvah, and even though it's a strong Safik, I mean like at least Safik over here, we don't say Safik Mutsimi Midei Vadai. So either it has to be a Vadai she went to the Mikvah to offset a Vadai that she had a sighting, or it has to be a Safik sighting that is offset by a Safik Tvila. But you can't have what you're suggesting over here, which is you have a Safik Tvila, to be motzimi de vadai. That's why Rabbi Abba said back to Rabbi Shmuel bar Yeva, you extrapolated Rabbi Yochanan to a place where he never said it. Okay, we're going to stop here, five lines down on the top of Tet Zayin Amud Aleph.